Welcome to the podcast. This is Please Leave a Message with your host, Richard McClain, and Just Smart Smiley is missing. Messages. He's not uploading the audio he told me he would. What is going on with Jess? It's a mystery. So I'm going to have to take it on my own this week. It's okay. Jess does this once in a while where he kind of disappears on me. Usually it's because he's got some big illustration project and he just can't take time out to do anything else. But he told me that he would record some audio and put it up for the podcast, credits and whatnot, and that still hasn't happened. So Jess, wherever you are, I hope you're okay. This is a podcast about exploring audio and songs and interviews. This week, we have an interview. Jess is actually the interviewer this week. Usually I do that, but Jess took the mantle of interviewer this week and he interviewed me. And that's what we're going to have this week as an interview. Before we get into that, Jess and I like to make sure that everybody listening, if you've had a birthday this week, that you get your happy birthday wish. Jess has found a song for us. A happy birthday song, and here it is.
So you're having a birthday today. This really is your special day. There's something we'd all like to say. Have a real happy birthday today. So you're having a birthday today. This really is your special day. There's something we'd all like to say. Have a real happy birthday today.
Happy birthday, everybody. There's not much to say about this interview. Essentially, when we came up with the concept for this interview section, we needed somebody to interview. And so to test out the questions, we used each other. So last week, you got to hear me interviewing Jess. And this week, you get to hear Jess interviewing me. So let's get started.
Richard, thank you for meeting me here.
Oh, absolutely.
Coming all the way out. maybe start with like your name and who you are.
Well, I'm Richard McClain. I work for the UVU Archives. I'm the digitization specialist. I do a weekly webcomic called We're All Game. I am one of the regular editors at the Draw Shop.
Okay, awesome. So we have a few questions that my buddy Richard McClain has put together.
Oh, okay.
So they're really good. I just want to hear about like one of your earliest memories.
My earliest memory, I'm in a stroller.
Wow.
I'm at Disneyland. And the attraction that I'm at isn't even there anymore. It's the Circle Vision 360 degree theater, which...
I don't know what that is.
They hooked up a rig of cameras that shot outwards in 360 degrees. So you stood in a circle-shaped room, and it projected from the middle out onto all the walls.
Got it.
I remember I was standing next to the stroller, holding onto the stroller.
Okay.
I'm like looking through a sea of legs. I remember the camera flying through like a field. Like it was hilly and green and luscious, and there were sheep grazing. And I remember kind of holding on and seeing all this. That's the only part of the whole thing that I remember.
That's insane.
At Disneyland.
Wow.
I've looked up the show since. It was a very patriotic show.
And okay.
It was scenes of America, and they played patriotic music and talked about stuff like that.
That's wild.
And I had to look it up to see if it was actually a thing, and it was.
Sure. That's crazy.
I think I also remember from that same trip, Knott's Berry Farm, and going to Berry Tales.
Okay.
And going on that ride over and over and over and over again. I loved it so much. It's not there anymore either.
Wow. That's interesting that that's a memory that is obviously like directly linked to what you do right now, like that takes up so much of your life and your thought and your interests. So I'm interested to know if there's anything else from your childhood maybe you haven't talked about much that also like has still just stuck with you.
A lot of my childhood memories are from my grandmother's house doing stuff. I probably spent more time at grandma's house than my own house when we lived up there. In her garage, it's a two-car garage, and on the left was where people would park, and on the right was actually just full of stuff. And I remember my cousin and I one day were playing in there, and we just started kind of crawling into the stuff. Because at the very bottom of the pile was like these two big giant carpet rolls.
Okay.
And that was like kind of the base of the whole thing. Like they were probably 3 feet tall. I remember we crawled up onto that one day, and we could kind of tunnel our way through the stuff.
Wow.
Because of the way it was. And we found like an open space kind of in the middle. Came our secret hideout. In the same garage, we discovered a stack of old newspapers. And we pulled out all the comics. And we took those comics in there.
Yeah.
And that's where I discovered Calvin and Hobbes.
Wow.
And I sat and I read Calvin and Hobbes. And I was really into The Far Side, too. And I just sat and I went through. There was a lot of them.
That even sounds like something Calvin would do. Like, just like turning the garage into a playground and hiding out, like reading comics. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just becoming just more aware of who I am right now to listeners is just this voice. What our listeners can't see, or what they don't know, is that I got really excited.
Yes.
I rented a tux.
Oh yeah. Fantastic.
It's great. Thank you. It's a blue tux. I thought a tux wasn't fancy enough, so I went with a blue tux, and I've got this yellow flower on my lapel. I don't know, I feel kind of silly now because no one can see it, but you dressed up as well, but you usually dress this way.
I do.
Yeah, what are you wearing?
I am wearing a kilt.
I think that's important for the listeners to visualize. Who is this guy? What does he look like? What is he wearing? He's wearing a kilt.
Absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Why don't you wear one?
Good point. Touché.
I always wanted one. And so I ordered one for myself for graduation. It had not arrived yet. And I was at Salt Lake Fan Expo 2.5 years ago. Utility Kilts was there. I'm like, I got to try one on.
Yeah.
So I tried it on. And I just said to the guy, I'm not leaving this booth without this kilt. And I bought it. And I wore it that day. And I bought kind of their low iron model.
Yeah.
And the next day I got up and I'm like, that was really comfortable.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to wear it again.
Okay.
And I've worn a kilt every day since.
Every single day?
Yeah.
For the last 2.5 years?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. I wear it to church.
That's so great. No one's going to question a guy in a kilt.
Nobody does. And frankly, it's quite comfortable. and you should really do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. See, I don't mind trying it on, but now I'm worried about maybe there's a commitment involved. Here you are 2.5 years going strong. Like,
I didn't know that going in.
Actually, I think you're the only person I've seen wearing the utility kilt. And so, I don't know. You just want to like talk about like what's the difference between like any it's other just, kilt and a utility kilt?
Well, you've got your traditional kilt. And that's actually the first one I ordered is a traditional kilt. It's our family tartan.
Yeah, yeah. And it's McLean. Got, that's pretty strong.
Utility kilt's more an everyday kind of thing because it's got pockets built in. So it's like cargo short type style pockets.
Yeah.
Sewed onto the side.
Yeah, and you took a couple of the pockets off.
Yeah, I took them off so recording. I wouldn't make a lot of noise on our recording.
Nice.
When I bought this one, I just went with the high end model because I knew I wore them every day.
Sure. So you work with audio for your job. You also, it sounds like, have an interest in audio that is more long lasting than just, you know, you fell into a job. Maybe it goes deeper than that. It sounds like
it does. And it's kind of funny how that came about. I ended up going back to school.
This is an animation student going to school, not in a kilt.
Not yet. I'm taking the animation courses. The way the digital media program works, everybody has to take the basic classes and everything. So because I was a transfer student, I didn't have to take any of the basic classes except the audio class.
Oh, okay.
I found that it completely clicked. I did not have to study for that class.
Oh, really?
At all. Like maybe a little bit just to get some dates down for a quiz here and there.
Okay.
The first assignment we were given on the first day of class was to do a Desert Island CD. So basically a mixed CD of all the songs you would want with you.
Oh.
If you were stranded on a desert island.
Oh, man. Was that hard?
It was. As soon as he told us that, I got out my notebook and I started writing stuff down.
Sure.
Immediately.
Wow.
But I'm like, oh, I got to get this right.
Okay.
I just immediately started writing stuff down.
Sure.
So by the end of the semester, because it was due the last day, it was given the first day, due the last day.
Okay.
And you had to do a cover. You had to do a label to put on the CD.
So you're also doing the packaging, the physical packaging for the... Okay.
And since I've done all the graphic design, then I was like, okay, I'm all over this.
You knew what you're doing, yeah. Right.
So it's getting close to the end of the semester.
Okay.
I still don't have my music narrowed down to where it will all fit on one CD.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is really hard choosing. And the teacher said, well, okay, I'm going to make an announcement. If you want to do a double disc set,
no,
you can do a double disc set.
No way. And did that make it easier or worse?
No, it just made it a lot easier. I only had maybe three songs that I had to just cut out.
Wow. So you got all but three songs on it?
All but about three that I had on my list.
That's awesome.
Would fit. I went overboard with the packaging, because really all I wanted was a booklet that folds in half.
Sure.
Some kind of picture on the front, a track listing, and,
so that,
and one paragraph, or not even one paragraph, one sentence about each song and why you picked it.
So that sounds like plenty. How did you go overboard on that assignment?
Well, I did a huge booklet.
Okay.
The front cover was my version of the Sgt. Pepper album.
Okay.
It has all the people that influenced me musically on there, and not just musically, but just creatively.
I can actually see a picture of this cover right here. And you have all these different people. It looks like Walt Disney on there. Mm-hmm. They're all cut out. There's like a spaceship or a robot or something in the back.
That's a tripod walker from the War of the Worlds.
It looks like Weird Al's up there.
Weird Al's on there.
Of course. Okay. And Yoda.
Yep.
And Hello Kitty.
Yep.
And a crash test. Okay. Yeah, you got a whole bunch up there.
Yeah, all kinds of things. I did a page for each song.
Wow.
In the booklet. And then like a paragraph, and I put the lyrics of all the songs that had lyrics in the booklet.
Sheesh.
And I made it look just like the CD cover for my Sgt. Pepper album. So I used the same color scheme. I picked a font that was really close to what they used. And
that's impressive. So are there Beatles songs or from specifically Sgt. Pepper?
That's my favorite Beatles album.
Okay.
So there's one of those songs is on there.
Okay.
But also, I have another version of Sgt. Pepper's by a band called Big Daddy.
Okay.
So what they do is they take contemporary songs and they do them in the style of the 50s.
Oh.
And for the 25th anniversary of the Sgt. Pepper album,
yeah,
they did the full Sgt. Pepper album.
No kidding.
50s style.
Wow.
So one of those songs is on there too.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah.
That's way cool. How many songs are on it? On the double disc?
It's a lot. I don't know off the top of my head.
Like more than 40?
So you can fit 80 minutes on a CD, and there's two CDs.
Yeah.
Songs average 3 to 5 minutes. So, but there, because of my taste in music, there are some much longer songs.
That's what I was wondering, if you had any like arias or, you know, something like...
There's one classical piece on there.
Okay.
That was one thing. I turned it in.
Uh-huh.
And if you know me, I kind of keep to myself.
Yeah.
It takes me a while to get to know people.
Sure.
And I'll be kind of quiet around people. So in class, I don't stand out a lot.
It's the kilt. It just quiets you down, tones you.
So before I was wearing the kilt, everybody wants to talk to me now that I have that. So it helps with my introversion issues. I turned the thing in on the last day, and the way I take tests is I fill them out as fast as I can. If I don't know the answer, I just don't know the answer. So even in class, even in the last class I took, which I totally bombed, I was the first one done with the final. 10 minutes, I filled out the final, I handed it in. I waited around for a few minutes to see if he would see my CD.
Sure.
Because I put a lot of work into it, and I just wondered what his reaction to it would be.
Yeah.
I left, and I thought that was that with my audio stuff.
Got it.
That class showed me how much I didn't know, or showed me that there was a lot more to know than I realized.
Okay.
Because I had edited audio before, because I'm in animation.
Yeah.
And so I've done video editing as a result of that. So I have done audio editing as a result of that.
Okay.
So I had done stuff, but it was just me kind of plugging through, kind of figuring out.
Oh, interesting.
Having lots of problems, but not realizing how much that I just didn't know.
Sure.
So I was really grateful for that class because it kind of opened my eyes to that.
So out of all these songs, is there one that stands out more than any other?
No.
Oh, no.
No, there's not. I turned it in and I actually ended up getting an email from the teacher 2 weeks later, I think.
Okay.
And he was gushing over my project.
No kidding.
He's like, oh my gosh, I've never met anybody that had such a wide breadth of taste. I mean, I can't believe you've got this song on it. I can't believe you've got this song on it. Nobody even knows this song exists. I forgot this song existed until you put it on there. And he essentially ended the letter with, we need to get together and spend time together, and we need to be best friends.
Okay.
And He and I are actually really good friends now.
Wow.
So, but because of that, he said, I've got this other audio class you might be interested in. And so I took that class, and then I took another class.
Okay.
So I really dove into audio.
Wow.
Kind of as a result of that. It was like this underlying thing. Like, I was always loved music.
Sure.
But I didn't think I liked it any more than the anybody else.
Okay.
Everybody likes music.
Okay.
I didn't realize how much more into it I was than other people.
What does that mean? Like, what kinds of things were you noticing that, like, maybe other people were you picking up on things that they wouldn't, or just the way you appreciated it?
I think it's just, I appreciate a lot. Like, my taste, it's not very narrow.
Okay.
I appreciate all kinds of things. Like, on that album, there's probably stuff as old as, well, there's some classical music on there, so that's, like, from the 1700s or something. But then there was also a couple songs on there that I had just discovered.
Hmm.
So they were, like, completely contemporary. And I've got a playlist of that on my computer, and I've even added a couple new songs to it.
Oh, cool.
Because on the playlist, I'm not limited to size.
It's good it's on your playlist, too, because I'm picturing, heaven forbid, you end up on this desert island and you don't have your CD player. That's actually great, because one of the questions that we kind of propose that we bring up with each person we interview is kind of a way of being able to understand them a little better and who they are and what they do. Share a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life. And here you have a solid three-hour block of music that it's all sounds like equally affecting.
Well, and recently I kind of realized for many, many years, if anybody asked me what my favorite album was.
Sure.
Like my favorite group, they might be Giants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, hands down, I've got so much of their stuff.
Oh, man. Love those guys.
So, favorite album for a long time, I would have to say Sgt. Pepper and Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles.
Okay.
Absolutely love that album. And then, but recently, this other album's just really been occupying me.
Ooh. Beatles album?
No. It's the one that the teacher said I forgot that one even existed until
okay.
He brought it up.
What is it?
So it's Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds.
Okay. It's never heard of that.
Most people in the United States have not. But it is in the top 40 of all-time sellers in the United Kingdom.
Where did you hear that?
I found it at the library on cassette tape when I was in probably junior high.
No kidding.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was cassette tape era, so I, of course, made a copy for myself.
Yeah.
And I listened to it over and over and over and over and over again. What it is.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say what it is.
Okay, good.
Because it's really quite unique.
Cool.
So it tells the story of the War of the Worlds, and it's essentially a musical version, and it's a mix of rock and electronic music and classical style music. It's a concept album
sure.
that tells the story of the War of the Worlds, and it's a double LP set. It was originally released in 1978.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And
that's really cool.
It's amazing. And just recently, it's been really occupying my time. I've literally just gone crazy about it again, because I got obsessed with surround sound.
Yeah.
Another long story, but I'm really a junkie when it comes to surround sound. And I found out that they did an anniversary release of this album and they remixed it in Dolby 5.1
okay.
surround sound on Super Audio CD, which is a format most people haven't even heard of.
Super Audio CD.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain what that is?
I'll just say that it stores the audio differently than a normal CD. It's stored at a much higher bandwidth.
Okay.
So it's a little bit better quality.
Is it a different disc than like a CD?
No, it looks the same. In fact, it's dual layered.
Okay.
So if you put it into a normal CD player, it'll play the normal CD layer. But if you put it in a Super Audio CD player, it'll play the Super Audio CD layer. So I've been kind of obsessed with this album again. I get into it around Halloween time, especially.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
Oh, that's perfect.
It's amazing to listen to in the dark. It's amazing in surround sound.
Wow.
How much,
you know, if you took all the time you spent related to this War of the Worlds concept album, how much time is spent listening to it, to the thing itself, and how much time is spent, like, researching or just learning about it? Yeah.
So recently I kind of went crazy. I found out that the stage show was released on Blu-ray. So I bought the Blu-ray. Then I found out that the Blu-ray was from the later iteration. They recorded it right before they did the last show.
Okay.
And so that was in 2013, I believe, was when they ended the show.
Okay.
They started the show in 2006.
Wow.
And so when they started it, they did a DVD. So I tracked down a copy of that.
Nice.
Then I found out there was a 7-disc special edition.
What?
Of it. So disc 1 and 2 were just the normal CD / Super Audio CD.
Sure.
Disc 3 was the remix album. So because it was so popular in the UK, a bunch of the popular like dance, DJ, EDM artists
sure.
got a hold of it.
And okay.
did all kinds of remixes for it. So there's actually 2 remix albums of it. There's the remix album, there's the remix album volume 2, and with the special edition, there are a remix album as well. And none of the track lists on any of them, like a lot of them are the same, but a lot of them aren't. None of the track lists from those 3 different versions line up.
Interesting.
Disc 4, 5, and 6 are actually outtakes from the 70s.
Oh, wow.
That, like, they just never used. And then the 7th disc is like a documentary on undoing the album.
That's amazing. So, I'm kind of a process junkie in, you know, in different areas, but that sounds like, man, you find something you love and then you find all these different iterations of it and behind the scenes. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've actually tracked down the remix album on CD. I've tracked it down on vinyl. I already had 2 copies of it on vinyl.
Okay.
I'm looking to get a copy on cassette tape because that was the original version I experienced it on.
Wow.
They did a video game in 2006. And that's actually what led to them doing the stage show.
No way. Because
they were revisiting it.
Holy cow.
And so they did, for the video game, they did all these like 3D graphics and stuff.
Uh-huh.
They ended up just taking that a step further. And behind the band is a 100-foot animation wall where they would project images of the story happening.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then, so in the beginning of the, when they first did the stage show, they were still using recordings of Richard Burton. He'd already died.
Okay.
But they sculpted a giant head of his, and it hung over the stage, and then they would project onto it animation of him narrating.
Wow. Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. So that was the early version of the show. The later version of the show, you can buy that album too. It's called The Next Generation or the New Generation.
Yeah.
And they have Liam Neeson is actually
really?
The voice of the reporter.
Wow.
And in that version of the stage show, Liam Neeson is in the show, but he's a hologram.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I will find those aliens and I will kill them. Is that his line? I hope that's his line.
Something like so, that. So that's amazing. I tracked down the video game. It's new in the box, still in packaging. And I even want to track down, there's an 8-track version that apparently is really hard to find.
So is there another piece of media, a book, a movie like you're talking about? Maybe it's an album or something you've listened to or seen that has also been influential in your life?
I would just have to say animation in general,
uh-huh.
but specifically Disney animation.
Disney animation.
Yeah, I think I chose when I was probably about 5 years old that I wanted to be an animator. And that has consumed me. When I first got into it, so I was 5, so it was just the hand-drawn stuff.
Yeah.
And that just the idea of that consumed me. I drew all the time because I wanted to be an animator.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, I don't remember not drawing. It was already something I enjoyed doing. But when I found out that people drew for a living, and not only did they draw, but the drawings moved.
Yeah.
I just
wow.
blew my mind, and I'm just like, that's what I want to do. And so, like, and I loved cartoons. I've watched so many cartoons. And because it's something I wanted to do, I think I looked at them with more of a critical eye than most people.
Sure, yeah.
I consumed it as a piece of art rather than consuming it as a piece of just entertainment.
Yeah. So for animation, like, and you're talking specifically Disney animation, are we talking like feature length, short, all Saturday morning, you know?
All of the above. Because when I was a kid, the old cartoons from the 30s, 40s, 50s would play on television all the time. So I saw those.
Sure.
But then I really enjoyed the feature length films.
Okay.
VHS was coming of age, so I could actually see those more often. And they would still run them on TV once in a while. But then there was also the Disney afternoon stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So the Saturday morning style right. cartoons. DuckTales, Gummy Bears, Tailspin.
Darkwing Duck. Oh, man. Did they do Gargoyles?
Was that it? Gargoyles. That was when I was in high school.
That was great.
And we all loved it.
Yeah.
because it was like the stuff we love, but it was a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
Because like at that same time, we were really into like kind of the alternative animation.
Okay.
So like the Max.
Oh, yeah.
From MTV and also Ren and Stimpy.
Those were great because they would do like the... They would freeze on like a funny face and it would just be a painting.
Right.
And it would just sit on it for five right. seconds. Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy was so different.
Yeah.
And so just out there. And, and that's what I loved, what everyone loved about it. It was just different. Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about Ren and Stimpy and also growing up watching like the reruns of like the 30s, 40s and 50s cartoons, kind of seems like those old Looney Tunes. I never really thought about it before, but I guess like just in my mind, in my memory at least, it seems like they have a lot in common with Ren and Stimpy as far as like just how exaggerated everything, like they take full advantage of the cartoon as a medium.
Right.
And like you can do things in what looks like real physical space right. so that you couldn't do.
Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And then Tex Avery got fired. And so Tex Avery went off and did his own stuff and he took it to another level. And then I think Ren and Stimpy, that's kind of what okay. that grew out of. Was
that makes sense. So I have a hunch that I have an idea of how you might answer this. But I want to know about your passion. What is your passion? Maybe you have multiple passions. And what is it about those passions that keeps you so attached to them? You know, why those passions and not others?
I think all my passions derive from my just love of the art of animation. Like everything I'm obsessed with is because I love animation.
Yeah.
Right now, the thing that just consumes me is surround sound. I just everything and anything.
What is it about surround sound?
It's kind of like how Looney Tunes beget Tex Avery beget Ren and Stimpy. It's just so exaggerated. The surround sound is the same thing. You know, mono was what sound was when it was invented, and then and stereo just made it so much more.
Sure.
And surround sound takes it even further. I mean, it just envelops you, and just depending, and there's different thoughts and practices and how you do it, and it just, you're so in the sound. It's not like a wall of sound in front of you,
right?
But it just envelops you, and it makes things that you've heard before, if you hear it surround, it's just so much more amazing.
Wow.
And so one of those audio classes that I took, the next one I took was digital audio restoration.
Okay.
So we would take old recordings and clean them up. So we learned how to, if you got a really scratchy record.
Sure.
We learned how to take all the pops and cracks and clicks out of it and take the noise out of it so it becomes a clean recording again.
Sounds pretty technical.
It is.
Yeah.
And there's specialty tools for doing it.
Sure.
Like you can use it for music and audio restoration and stuff, but you can also take those same skills and you can apply them to spy stuff.
If you were a spy, you'd have to tell me, right?
No, actually.
Just the fact that you know that.
I think I would be obligated to not tell you.
Oh, man. What have I gotten myself into here? So you could maybe help out the government or something.
I have, it says on my business card that I do audio forensics.
That's amazing.
Nobody's ever hired me to do that, but it's the same skill set that I use for audio restoration. So anyway, the audio restoration led to me getting heavily into surround sound, but also it's linked to Disney animation.
Okay, you're going to have to help me out here.
Okay, so
What's the link?
I'm doing the audio restoration class.
Yeah.
We are assigned an extra credit assignment.
Sure.
To do a one page. We just had to pick something to do with audio and write a report on that.
Okay.
In the back of my head, I remembered reading in one of my Disney animation books that Walt Disney had created a surround sound system. And I couldn't even remember exactly what it was for. I just remembered that little sentence from something I'd read long ago. And so I tracked it down, and it was for Fantasia. They called it Fantasound.
Okay.
And it was the first surround sound system in 1940. There were two major installations of it. One at the Off-Broadway Theater in New York. I think it's Circle Carthay Theater in Los Angeles. And those were like permanent installations. So they installed the system. Fantasia ran in those theaters for about a year.
Okay.
And Walt wanted to take the theater experience and elevate it. He wanted it to be more than just going to the movies. He wanted it to be more like going to the opera. He wanted people to dress up. And so they came up with Fantasia to kind of elevate the theater experience.
Yeah.
And they charged $6 for a ticket, which most movies at the time were 50 cents. And you got a full color program with it. That's where they came up with the Disney hospitality that you get at the theme parks. They taught their the theater employees that same kind of, that's where they kind of started that. There's some disparity about how many speakers were in the system. And I think that's because each of them had a different number of speakers.
Sure.
But the highest number is 90.
Holy cow.
90 speakers. That was in New York.
Now, does that mean they're feeding the same sound into every single speaker? And no, you're just...
it does not. It was four tracks. So there was left, right, there was surround information, and then there was a click track.
What's a click track?
It just had clicks on it.
Oh.
But they automated the system and told it where to steer surround information. So the idea, basically, because they wanted to do, they didn't, but they wanted to do Flight of the Bumblebee and have like a bumblebee. Literally, you could hear it flying around.
Oh, wow. Theater.
That's kind of where the idea came from.
Wow.
That's why they figured out how to do it in the first place.
Okay.
And that's what led to it. So yeah, 1940. And then World War II happened. And they actually took the systems apart to contribute to the war effort. And so there wasn't surround sound again for many years. There were a few systems. There were a few six-channel systems.
Okay.
But nothing that came close to what Disney had until Dolby Atmos came out in 2012.
So that was like the next major advancement?
No, there were lots of advancements in between.
Right.
That was the first system that could do...
Oh, I see.
...what Fantasound could do.
Wow. Well, that's incredible.
Walt didn't do anything small.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that drew me to Disney animation was Walt himself. I've read a lot about him, and he's just a hero of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, there's a story about the storyboard meeting for Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Okay.
And they're talking, and they're describing that Mickey's up there, and he's directing.
Yeah.
It's during the dream sequence part, and he's, like, directing, and he's controlling the elements. And Walt was just kind of sitting back. He was kind of getting frustrated with him as they're going with him. He's like, dang it, guys. You got to think bigger. He's directing the stars and the planets and all of the heavens. They just took it that next level up.
That's great.
And there's another story that I read about him where they had done Pinocchio and the opening scene with all the cuckoo clocks doing all the crazy
things. Oh, yeah.
So one of the animators came to him and said, yeah, this scene is great, but you'd never be able to build a cuckoo clock that does the kind of stuff that those cuckoo clocks do. And Walt kind of goaded him on. And eventually that guy came back and he had built a cuckoo clock that could do a crazy thing.
One last question I want to ask you, just specifically about what makes you tick. You know, what is it that is like a driving force that keeps you going?
I think my overarching theme, the thread that runs through all of my obsessions, is curiosity. I just want to know how everything works. I want to know about everything. I learn about something, and then I obsessively read about it, you know? Just one little thing. So, like, that paper that I wrote about Fantasound, it was about one page was required. I think I wrote about six pages on it. And that was just on material that I already had in my library at home.
Wow.
I just kind of gathered it all together, and I found all the resources on it. Which, that's a lot, because in all the books that I've ever read where they talk about it, it's just kind of a footnote.
Right.
And then I took the next class, which was the advanced audio restoration, where we were supposed to take something specifically about audio restoration. And I had been at a record shop, because getting back into audio got me back into records.
Okay.
And so I was at a record shop just digging through the bins one day, and I found these quadraphonic records.
Oh, man.
And that was a footnote from my audio class. I remembered him mentioning it, but it was literally just kind of passed over. But it's surround sound, four-channel surround sound on a record. And that idea fascinated me. And I had to learn everything because I'm like, okay. I'm learning how to restore records. I'm wondering if I can take this surround sound record and I can figure out how to extract those four channels. And so I did research online, and I found out that, yes, in fact, there was a technique. So I bought every single quad record I could find from that point on. And then I lucked into buying a couple pieces of equipment from the 70s so I can actually listen to them the way they were intended to be listened to.
That's great.
And there's like just this wealth of audio from the 70s that's in surround sound that nobody knows about. And I just obsessed about it. That paper, again, that class, we were assigned this an extra credit one-page paper on something
sure.
to do with audio restoration. That was a 20-page paper I wrote.
Wow.
20 pages, no pictures, single-spaced. And that was just from what I was researching in my spare time because I was fascinated with it. Mm. So it's just, it's curiosity drives me.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to learn about everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if people want to find you online or get in touch or ask you questions about Jeff Wang's War of the Worlds, or, you know, they want to find out more about some of these things you've talked about, or maybe they even have some work to send your way.
There's three easy ways to get a hold of me. One is through my webcomic, weareallgame.com.
Okay.
I think I've got some links on there to email that you can contact me with. Or I'm on Instagram, instagram.com/RichardBMcLean. Or you can find me on Facebook as Richard B. McLean.
Perfect. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
And there you have it. Now you should all know what makes me tick. And, you know, you'll get to know Jess and I more and more as you listen to more of these episodes. More than one reason why we are running a little late this week. Jess is kind of missing in action, but also we're having some technical difficulties. Podcasting is new to us. We've never done it before. We've got the website set up, and we're hosting on SoundCloud right now. But we're looking at alternatives to that, because SoundCloud's kind of pricey, which we didn't realize when we decided to do a podcast. I guess that's one thing we probably should have researched. And also, something about the way our RSS feed is set up on the website is preventing the iTunes link up from working. So we're trying to get that fixed. So if anybody out there in a listener land is really good with computers and back-end stuff and thinks they can help us with a podcast, we'd really appreciate some help with that. I feel like I should get the phone number. The please leave a message phone number. Right now we're asking people to call in with their funniest joke. Do you know a funny joke? I don't really know any funny jokes. They don't stick in my head for some reason. Maybe that's why I'm not a stand-up comedian. If you can help us with our technology, you could call us at 801-382-7672. We're dirt poor podcasters, so this isn't a paid position. This is a volunteer. You'd really like to help out your buddies Richard and Jess. Or, if you have a really funny joke, please call 801-382-7672. That's 801-382-7672. And leave us your funniest joke, and it will be featured on a future podcast.
It takes a long time to realize you can't drive faster than your guardian angel can fly. Can't fly. It takes a long time to realize you can't drive faster than
So I don't even know where that comes from. Just put it up for the podcast, and that was The Upside Down by E-Love off of the Dead Bees record label sampler, number 11. You remember our first guest from 2 weeks ago, Blair Sterrett? Blair is really into Halloween stuff, and around Halloween time, he put some records up for sale on Facebook and asked anybody if they wanted them, and I finally picked up the ones that I ordered from him. I got those today. One of them is Bob and Ray Throw a Stereo Spectacular with Julie Andrews, the Belafonte Singers, Skitch Henderson, Lena Horne, Guckenheimer Sauerkraut Band, Abby Lane, the Melacrino Strings, Radio City Music Hall Organ, and Souter and Finnegan, or Souter Finnegan. Anyway, I really wanted this record, A, because it's a stereo spectacular. I love records that were put out to demonstrate the new stereo sound, because they really played and had fun with the left-right speaker thing, and some of them are really ping-pongy. This one's from 1958, it's the original pressing. And one of the cool things about this is it has a Jack Davis cover. Jack Davis is a very famous illustrator, and he did a lot of album covers. This is one of his, and it's really cool. And then another one I got from him is Walt Disney Studios' Chilling, Thrilling Sounds of the Haunted House. And it's... I already have three copies of this, but this one had a different cover than I've ever seen before. So I had to buy it. I just had to because it had a different cover. And I love the artwork on it. Let me tell you a story about Disney's Chilling, Thrilling Sounds of the Haunted House. So the first time I came across this was in cassette taped form, and I found it at my local library, and I liked it. I took a copy of this cassette tape with me on a scout camp, and I played it to all my tent mates in the middle of the night on our little Walkman knockoff cassette tape recorder. And the funny thing about this particular album, it is spooky as all get out. It is probably one of the spookiest Halloween sounds records that I've actually ever listened to, because it has that signature Disney flavor to it. Disney insisted that everything that they did at the studio told a story, and this, unlike a lot of Halloween records that just are sound effects that almost seem random, this one tells a lot of different stories. I'll just read the back. It starts with night creatures, then haunted house, the dungeon, the witches, encounter in the fog, a grave matter, the grave robbers, and mad scientist's laboratory. And then the elements, creatures, ghosts and phantoms, frightening devices, and haunting music. And it really is, it tells a story. It's quite spooky. And I played it and scared everyone in the tent, and we got to bed really, really late because of it. So it is in fact one of my favorite albums. This is my fourth copy of it. Another thing I got from Blair was his wife's Halloween album, Monsteria, by Valerie Rose Sterrett. I haven't even had a chance to listen to this yet. Oh my goodness. That is hand-drawn artwork? That looks like hand-drawn artwork on the cover. That is amazing. How many of these did they make? And they're all individual like that? It doesn't look printed. That looks like marker. That is great. Rain on My Brain, Fractured, Yesterday's Ghost, Lullaby to the Grave, Cobweb, Zombie Attack, Dragged, The Bridge, Songbird, Misery Storm, Darkest of Days, and Monsteria. No, vocals and keyboard by Valerie Rose Sterrett, and accordion and musical saw by B.C. Sterrett. That's pretty awesome. I can't wait to listen to this thing. So we've got some found audio, it looks like, this week. I played this, but I didn't really know what the source was. It's some kind of found audio. It sounds like an answering machine, but an answering machine for where?
Thing and wonderful that you are still alive.
Well, I'll see you in a little bit. Bye. Singer, number 85.
Otherwise, I'll be here all day. Take it easy.
Hi, it's me. I'll give you a call later. My number at work, by the way, is area code 312-996-7353.
I love the background music. Hi, Nico. This is Helen. And I didn't get any more information about that silver coat, but when I asked him a second or third time, he said, silver coat, if you just said silver coat, I mean, that's all you have to know. And Allied Building Products, I do not know where it is. They have not come to apply that yet. So if you're not in a hurry, I will ask them again when they come. It's raining today, and you should not be on the golf course. I'm home. We'll talk later. Bye.
So anyway,
what did you do this weekend?
Well, I've been working myself on this porch. I got it all done. I just finished it, in fact. Come by after, have a drink with me.
Adam's with me. Do you mind?
No, of course not. I have to leave at 6 o'clock and I'm going to the club game.
But
stop by, have a drink.
Okay, because the dog has got to get out.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Come see me later.
Yeah, okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. We'll see what happens later on today.
What's going to happen later on?
I wonder where she is.
She said, she said to me, well, I'm sorry that Dean isn't here today. And I said, well, Ben, you'll have to get an answer from the Dean eventually.
What a mess, huh?
Yeah, it is a mess.
What a mess.
I mean, it's not my job. Now, if she says to me, well, you're the chair, you have to assume that job, I'm going to tell her I'm not assuming that job for this salary.
That's right.
It's not in my contract to run the gallery. It's in your contract.
That's right.
And I'm going to say, if she wants me to run the gallery, that's a one-third preparation. I want $10,000 more a year.
At least. It's more than that. I've been there 4 days a week because of the gallery sometimes.
Yeah. It's a 12,000.
Big job.
It's a third preparation.
It's a big job.
So it's about $12,000.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. So...
we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
I have no idea what that was all about. Crazy stuff in there. So that's our episode for this week. I've got a really cool interview for you next week. A buddy of mine, Brian H. Taylor. He's a local artist, illustrator, children's book author, and a really cool guy. I've known him for a really long time, and I was excited to get him on. Had to kind of talk him into it. Because the kind of people that I want to interview, these different artists and whatnot, they're a little reluctant to come on the podcast. But I tell them that I'll make them sound good. So that usually does it. That's our podcast for this week. And it's been great to be with you. And we'll see you next time. Got something. I just need to remind you to give us a call and leave your funniest jokes. We're still looking for jokes and jokes and lots of jokes. So the number you can call us at is 801-382-7672. And just call us and leave your funniest jokes and try to make us laugh. And we'll get you on the show.